Today, we find out about a horror movie version of Can't Stop the Music. We finally ask the question, who let the cats out at the Bloodsport? And caftans, caftans, caftans. All this and more on a How Did This Get Made mini-episode. Hit the theme! How Did This Get Made? What's up, dum-dums? It's me, Paul Scheer, and welcome to the How Did This Get Made mini-episode, where I tell you all the info that you need for next week's podcast and all the things that you might have missed from last week's episode. But first, let's get in to you guys. What's on your mind? That's right, it's time for Explanation Hopes. You've called in our hotline number, that's 619-PAUL-ASK-ASK, and you've left me your explanation hopes, and this is the point of the show where I try to make some sense of all of your questions. Let's get to it. Our first question is from Down Under, from Alvin in Australia. Alvin, what do you got?
Hi, my name's Alvin. My worker would be obstetrician. And my correction slash omission slash statement is, do you know there was an Australian horror movie made, a horror comedy movie made recently called You Can't Stop the Murders, where a bunch of, a serial killer in a country town kills a biker, a cop, a Native American, and such and such and such, and, you know, hilarity ensues. But also, one of your audience members said that what they would like to see as a replacement Village People was the mailman. And it turns out, spoiler alert for the film You Can't Stop the Murders, but the person that kills everybody is the mailman. And at the end, the climactic battle has the guy doing a You Can't Stop the Postman as a song. He'd written a song and he wanted the Village People to sing it. I hope this is interesting slash amusing slash worthy enough for you to ring. If not, enjoy. All right, cool. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Wait, what? What the fuck? There is a horror movie of Can't Stop the Music? In which the postman kills the Village People because he's not in the Village People. This is why Australia is awesome. I've said it before, I said it again. You got the Sydney Opera Hall, you got Crocodile Dundee, you got Kangaroo Jack, and apparently some big ass shrimp. What more could you need from a place to live, okay? This place has it all, and now they have a horror movie version of Can't Stop the Music, a movie that no one even knows. I wonder if they tried to just do that under the radar, like, hey, I saw this movie in America, and let's just make a horror movie version of that. Because it's not like it's so popular, like, you know, when they make those movies like a Scary Movie, or, you know, it's not like a movie that was, like, so big, even like Grease, that you would want to revisit it in a parody way. I don't know. Alvin, thank you. And if we can find the trailer for that, please send that to us. We can post it on our Twitter page. I need to see the Australian Can't Stop the Murder. Okay, now let's go to Anthony. Anthony has a question about music.
Hi, Paul. This is Anthony. I have more of an explanation hope for you. What's your favorite musical number of all time of all the How Did This Get Made movies? Thanks. Bye.
Ooh, Anthony, that is a really good question. We've done a lot of musicals on the show to varying degrees. You know, some have been amazing. Some have been outright terrible. But I would say that to answer this question, I think the easiest answer would be to pick something from Xanadu because it's visually stunning. You have amazing people in the film, but that's not what this show does. We take pleasure in the awkwardness. We take pleasure in the pain. So I have to think, what is probably one of the most awkward dance numbers we've seen? And I think it comes down to a little movie called From Justin to Kelly. Yes, that's right. From Justin to Kelly, I think has the most awkward dancing because they aren't trying to evolve the form. They're basically trying to replicate something that Grease did many years ago, but without the sex appeal or really kind of, I don't know, that sparkle. I don't know how to describe it. I can literally tell you that it was trying to be hip and current, but failed so bad. And I know that we're looking at other movies from the 70s and seeing all that sort of stuff, and it's funny because it's kitschy and there's nostalgia to it, but they're still well produced on some level. But Justin to Kelly, when I watch the musical numbers, it makes me uncomfortable. Specifically that scene, I think they're in Miami or Daytona Beach, where they're like meeting each other for the first time or seeing each group of their friends. I get just the tingles of uncomfortability. I can't even watch it. You know, literally, like, they couldn't even pull off what Grease was doing. I think maybe because they're not good dancers. And believe me, I'm no great dancer. I'm no great singer. I'm not saying I could do it better. But there was something about it that just gives me the willies. And so I'm going to say that my favorite is actually my least favorite. And you could probably pick any number from Justin to Kelly. But I'm going to pick that opening number where they're both with their, like, dude and girlfriends. Okay, our next question comes from someone with no name. Take it away, no name.
Hey, this first-time listener, long-time caller. No, that's not right. I'm the other way around. Anyway, just watched the Crazy Village People, Can't Stop the Music, How Did This Get Made? And it turns out that the Milkshake TV commercial is not quite as far-fetched as your panel might think. In 1970, Heinz, the ketchup people, made a ridiculous one-minute-long production number starring Ann Miller advertising their Great American Soups. You need to look it up on YouTube for a crazy, crazy treat. This is Norman Mallard calling from Akron, Ohio.
Please, can we find this? I did a little searching on YouTube. I could not find a ketchup musical. I need to get this again. If you find it, put it on Twitter. We'll play it on the next episode. We need to see the ketchup musical. If it's anything like Milkshake, watch out. Because, I mean, look, you gotta shake that ketchup bottle, right? You gotta shake it hard to get that ketchup out. It's very similar in theme. And we finally end up with our good pal, Rosa. Rosa has a question about casting.
Hi, Paul. This is Rosa, fellow Long Islander and just a fan. I just listened to the Can't Stop the Music podcast. By the way, great job all around. So I have done a little bit of research myself on Can't Stop the Music, and I saw that originally the part of Samantha was written for Olivia Newton-John because the producer, Alan Carr, had worked with her on Grease. My question to you is, did she make the right call doing Xanadu instead of Can't Stop the Music, or could she have been a better Samantha? Thanks a lot. I hope that you have a great week, and I'll keep listening. Thank you.
Ooh, Rosa, good choice. But I have to say, I think the roles are perfectly cast. Olivia Newton-John did Xanadu, which has lived on in cult infamy. I mean, there have been Broadway musicals about it. There have been drag queens based on it. There have been stage shows, costumes, etc. No one remembers Can't Stop the Music. So I think when you're casting and you think like, oh, should I have done the bigger bomb or the smaller bomb? I think it's better to live and make something that was so colossally remembered as being a misstep than to do something that just fades away and wasn't quite good. I mean, it's like you have like all of Burt Reynolds' career is kind of like that. Just like, oh, yes, it's bad, but I didn't really see it. But then when you kind of take those big swings, you become like Tommy Wiseau. But Olivia Newton-John is perfectly cast as this god from Mount Olympus. You believe it's the accent. Australian accent. Oh my God. Another reason Australia is great. Just throw her right in there with Kangaroo Jack. She is awesome. And I think Valerie felt more like a New York City girl. I think they both were woman. Sorry. They both were just of the time, of the moment, perfectly cast. Neither of them made a mistake. And I gotta say, both beautiful, beautiful women who led these movies. I mean, these movies are really on their shoulders, both of them. And they killed it. Both of them did. All right, so I'm sure you're all wondering, what is our movie? Oh, that's the end of Explanation Hopes. If you guys have a theme for an Explanation Hope, why don't you post it on SoundCloud, tag it with HDTGM, and, you know, title it Explanation Hope Theme, and we will play it on the show. We were, you know, we're blowing out these minis now, so come on, help us out. Make the show great. Oh, by the way, the Howdies are coming. That's right. The second annual Howdies are coming. It starts at Gooby and goes all the way through our latest episode. And what I'm asking for right now are volunteers. People to help us get in the mix, remember things from these episodes, and most importantly, make some supercuts. Last time we had a wig supercut, we had a movie trailer mashup. If you have the means, if you want to get in and you want to do something fun for us for the second annual Howdies, I'd love to have you be a part of the show. Just let us know if you want to help. You can email us at howdidthisgetmade@earwolf.com. You can tell us about it on Twitter and we'll start collecting names and giving assignments. But really right now, I'm talking to you super cutters because I think the show was so much fun last year when we put together a montage, audio montages of all of us. So get your mind wrapped around that, starting from Gooby, going all the way to whenever the Howdies air, which will be in a handful of weeks. Probably like in August sometime. So that's a more than a handful. Okay, so the movie for next week. We have left the New York City of Can't Stop the Music, but we're keeping the roller skates as we tackle the post-apocalyptic teen adventure, Solar Babies. What's that? You never heard of Solar Babies? Oh, you're missing out. Let me tell you how IMDb describes it. In a future in which most water has disappeared from Earth, we find a group of children, mostly teenagers, who are living at an orphanage run by the despotic rulers of the new Earth. The group in question plays a hockey-based game on roller skates and is quite good. It has given them a unity that transcends the attempts to bring them to heel by the government. Finding an orb of special power, they find it has unusual effects on them. They escape from the orphanage on skates and try to cross the wasteland looking for a place they can live free as the stormtroopers search for them and the orb. Holy shit. I've seen this movie. I've done the podcast about this movie. And that's the most succinct way to describe what this fucking batshit crazy movie is about. It is available on Amazon Video for $2.99. You can definitely check it out. Or right now, listen to the trailer. Not that the trailer takes place of watching the movie, but do both. Check it out, Solar Babies, $2.99 on Amazon. Here's a trailer.
Earth, 1,000 years in the future. Out of the heavens comes a mystical and powerful force. It is called Bodai.
We're gonna get Bodai.
The law requires that I take them to my headquarters.
Armed with the power of the magical being Bodai, a young band of rebels is our only hope to conquer the forces of evil that would destroy the planet Earth. The magic, the mystery, the adventure. Solar Babies.
All right, and now, if you know anything about the show, we have been doing these amazing oral histories. Blake Harris, a famous author of Console Wars, which is a book. If you like video games and stuff like that, you definitely should pick it up. It's fantastic. It's all about Nintendo and Sega and that kind of war. It's kind of like the Pepsi and Coke of video games. It's awesome. He has been taking his talents to find out how these movies actually got made. And sometimes when a lot of people have passed from a movie that we've done, we have to kind of be a little bit more creative. And that was the case with this film. We noticed something right away in the trailer, and the trailer showed that this was from Alan Carr. And I don't think anyone realized who Alan Carr actually was. He was a famous Hollywood producer. Now, in this day and age, when you see From Judd Apatow, you know, oh, it's going to be a very funny comedy. But what was Alan Carr known for? So Blake went deep to find out who was the man, the myth, the legend of Alan Carr. You can read the entire article on Slash Film, which is my favorite film website. They kill it over there. But this is all about Alan Carr as told to Blake by the associate producer on Can't Stop the Music, Neil Maclis. Alan was the ultimate showman. At some point when I first started working on Grease, he had a Rolodex party at his house in Malibu. Friday night was A through L, and Saturday night was M through Z. I swear to God. He had the Klieg lights and the whole thing. Now, Alan used to wear caftans. I mean, as a matter of fact, he had this 1976 Eldorado convertible, and the license plate said caftan. Right? So anyway, he invited me to come on both nights, and of course I went. I mean, all I know is my jaw was dropped open because I'm looking at all these celebrities. I mean, this was A-list. It was like, oh my God. Alan knew everybody. And here's what Alan would do during those parties. Since he loved making an entrance, he would go upstairs maybe two or three times during the party, and he would change into a different caftan. And then he'd make another big entrance down the stairs. I mean, that was Alan. Like I said, He was the ultimate showman. Oh, holy shit, that is fucking awesome. I love a man who is confident in wearing a caftan. If you don't know what a caftan is, take a look. But Kanye kind of has done that too. Kanye is kind of an ultimate showman who wears caftans as well. Alan Carr basically at a dinner one night was like, hey, we should make a movie with the Village People. Let's go. And just got that movie going. Alan is a great guy. One of the coolest, like, LA Hollywood partiers that I don't think we know that much about, and this article really gets to it. So head on over to slashfilm.com to find out more about that. But now, let's get into corrections and omissions. Hit the theme!
Ba 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 ba. You got corrections, ba 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 ba. You got omissions, ba 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 ba. You got corrections and omissions, ba 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 ba.
All right, people, these are corrections and omissions culled from our Earwolf message boards, and what a message board it was. This episode really divided a lot of people. If you went on Reddit, it was our worst episode we've ever done. If you've gone on our message boards, people were pretty much equally divided. It was good, it was bad. If you go on Twitter, it was the best episode we've ever done. So it's a really interesting thing when that happens, because there were things that people did not like about this episode, but those same things were the things that people loved about this episode. So putting aside, is a penis necessary? We're going to actually just stick to the comments that are relevant to the actual film. I think that's probably the most productive way to do it. I love a good spirited debate. And I have to say, as always, message boards, you guys keep it together in there. And I know it got heated at certain points, and I know there's a lot of passion going on there, but thank you for not being total dicks to each other, as you could see on different places, how people got a little bit more heated. Okay, this first one is from Kia Ale. I'm going to say Kia Ale. It's kind of like a beer of a car. Paul says Bruce / Caitlyn Jenner only acted in two things, this film and Jack and Jill. However, Bruce did a lot of TV guest appearances, including appearances on Chips, The Love Boat, and Murder, She Wrote, as well as an appearance in the terrible 2014 film, The Hungover Games. Well, I stand fucking corrected. No, actually, I don't. I said he was only in two films, and I stand by that, okay? I didn't want to talk about his TV work. I was talking about motion picture acting, okay? And I don't consider The Hungover Games an actual motion picture. So I'm right, you're wrong. Go fuck yourself, Kia Ale. No, you're right. Yeah, Bruce, Caitlin was in a lot. This is right here from Electra Boogaloo. Now, I've gone down a rabbit hole of reading stuff about the Village People. I did not realize the cop in this movie is not the original cop, and that neither cop is gay. This is entirely new information to me. Then Dask360 jumps in and says, Paul mentioned Victor Willis and his girlfriend, but he admitted that Ray Simpson replaced him during pre-production, so the pair are never on screen. Ray, clearly not worried about anyone questioning his orientation, looks like he's having a blast in the movie, not to mention enjoying the promotion from his backup singer to top cop. I think he did leave of his own accord, so only his girlfriend was fired. I can only imagine her showing up on the first day of shooting and someone asking, what the fuck are you still doing here? Is it crazy that the lead singer of a biopic, loose term, isn't in their own movie? Even more crazy that two of their biggest hits, Macho Man and In the Navy, are absent as well? Although Valerie does wear a Macho Woman t-shirt at the Y. Electra Boogaloo jumps in and says, furthering the mystery of the girlfriend Paul mentioned, Victor Willis was married to a young Felicia Rashad during 78 to 1982 and the movie would have been in production, right? So was the girlfriend his mistress? Or just like someone playing his girlfriend? Well, great questions, Dask and Electra. All I can say is this. Nate Kiley does my research, and I read from that. I don't go deeper than that. He could have gotten bad research. Sometimes we find out that we get some bad research because guess what? The internet is full of lies. But if you put it on Wikipedia, it becomes a truth. So someone find out what's going on with this boyfriend-girlfriend situation. We need to get to the bottom of it before we can live our lives again. All right, this one here is from Slide Pocket. Can't Stop the Music was not Steve Guttenberg's film debut. His first role was in a 1977 teen comedy called The Chicken Chronicles, when his follow-up was a small role in the 1978 film The Boys from Brazil before Can't Stop the Music became his first starring role. Well, guess what, Slide Pocket? I meant starring role, okay? So sue me. What's its mission? Oh, I love that name. Says, I understand this is not an in-depth comment, but I laugh my ass off at the fact that Samantha's ice cream not only never melted over the course of what had to be a few hours, but also changed flavors. First round, chocolate on top of vanilla. Second round, vanilla is now on top of chocolate. Final round, just vanilla. Now, there are some pictures posted in the message board of this. It's amazing. The only thing I can say here is if the first round was chocolate on top of vanilla, and then the second round was vanilla on top of chocolate, and the third round was just vanilla, I'm going to say, well, no, I guess none of that makes sense. Fuck it. You found a flaw. The only flaw in this flawless movie, what's its mission? You figured it out. Your mission is finding ice cream flaws and giving us screen grabs to prove it. Cameron H. chimes in and says, the thing that really stood out to me about this Village People movie was how the Village People themselves come off as the most ancillary of ancillary characters. You could have written them out of the movie completely and it wouldn't have changed the story at all. I mean, what the movie seems to be about is a composer's roommate who uses her brains to coerce her horny ex-boyfriend into giving a bunch of random dudes she meets on the street a shot at superstardom, thereby achieving her roommate's dream for him. Also, the movie not only accepts but revels in the fact that the Village People were a manufactured group. Goot's mother even says, my son invented the Village People, and no one even bats an eyelash. The Village People don't say, well, the Village People wouldn't be a thing if it weren't such great dancers and singers. And Samantha doesn't step in and say, technically, I invented the Village People. Jack just wrote a bunch of songs he couldn't even sing. I think had I wrote this movie, I would have put the Village People themselves at the center of the movie instead of trying to tell a fake origin story. Basically do A Hard Day's Night or even Help, just starring the Village People. Shoot, that practically writes itself. I also have a hard time believing that the construction worker's dream involves him fighting off the sexual advances of a throng of beautiful women wearing red evening dresses. Nice try, movie, but just like Justin Bieber's entire music catalog, I'm not buying it. Whoa, there we go, Cameron's coming through with the fucking digs. Also, does anyone else feel like eating a hefty plate of lasagna, possibly the worst thing to eat prior to an evening full of patio sing dancing? Holy shit, Cameron. Yes, yes, yes. And Tom Spanks writes, I don't think the podcast addressed this, but Jack's mother was played by June Havoc, sister of Gypsy Rose Lee, from vaudeville star to the Village People buy-up. I thought that maybe the model agent getting stuck in the telephone booth was going to be a reference to La Cabina, the telephone box, a short TV film from the 70s, but it never went anywhere. Well, God damn it, I have no idea what you're talking about, and maybe it is. No, don't even worry about that. I have no idea. First time caller, long time listener writes, Valerie's character says a couple of times that Caitlin's character was younger than her and acted as if it was a barrier between them getting together. Like in the clip that played in the episode when they got stuck on the chair, she says, listen, I draw the line at younger men, but I definitely draw the line at younger married men. And when Caitlin's mother comes into the audition, everyone's jaws hit the floor and wolf whistles are heard. Preen's character gets awkward and says, mother? She looks better than I do. But at the time of filming, Caitlin was 30 and Valerie was 36. They looked to be the same age. That's not that much of a difference, really. And, well, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, was this character of Samantha originally supposed to be played by an older woman? After they cast Perrine, they just couldn't be bothered to change the script? You know what? That would not surprise me at all. Plus the fact that the director, Nancy Walker, wasn't on set for Valerie's scenes, so she probably never even can catch that because she's like, who cares? Lando writes, among the people waiting in the waiting room to audition for the Village People is Black Lawless, the future lead singer of the shock heavy metal band Wasp. He's one of the two maniacs on the secretary's desk chewing on the phone cords. This basically means that Blackie Lawless auditioned to be one of the Village People. And if you know anything about Wasp, it's pretty amusing. Well, I don't know anything about Wasp, but I still find it to be interesting. Blackie Lawless, I guess. This probably, again, appeals to the same people who want to talk about La Cabina, the telephone box from the 70s. No, I don't know anything about Wasp, but look, you got to feed yourself. You got to take those movie parts, even if you're part of Wasp. Electra Boogaloo chimes in again and goes, the director is actually a woman, Nancy Walker. Walker is better known as an actress. She had her own show, The Nancy Walker Show, in the 70s and played Ida Morgenstein on Rhoda. I think she was also Rosie. Wasn't she Rosie, like, in the towel ads? I don't know. As far as I can tell, Can't Stop the Music is the only feature she directed, although she also did episodes of Alice and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Well, that's interesting. I mean, not fascinating, but interesting. Okay. Why am I being so hard on you guys? These are fucking awesome. Thank you for them. But I think why I'm being hard is because it's going to be a tough one to pick who the winner is. Because my gut is to go with what's its mission. I mean, the ice cream cone conspiracy is pretty solid, but you know what? It's simple. I think the person who put in the real time, who kind of figured out the real meaning of what a Village People movie should have been, is the one, the only, Alan Carr of 2016, Cameron H. Cameron H., you are a winner. Play the theme.
You win.
Yay!
That's right, Cameron H., enjoy it. You're back on top again. All right, now it's time for a part of the show we like to call Fan Creations. Fan Creations is a chance when you guys get to show me something that you have put together. Now, Avril Halley puts together amazing stuff for our show all the time. You can check her out at moviebitches.com on, well, not moviebitches.com. Go to her YouTube page, Movie Bitches, and you can see all the stuff that she's put together. But not to be outdone, someone called in with a very interesting point. Brandon, explain.
Hey, Paul, this is Brandon in Salt Lake City, Utah. Just an omission that I noticed in the Bloodsport episode. There is a constant meowing that's in the fight scenes. It's really off-putting. There's a lot of just inserted meowing. It almost feels like whoever was in charge of sound for that movie really wanted to get the effect of the Asian culture and what goes on in an Asian warehouse or wherever they're fighting, and wanted to insert some meows in there to make it seem like it was an alley or an alley cat or something to that effect, and really just went with it with that button and did not stop. Just curious to see what you think, if you noticed it too. There's actually a super cut that one of the other fans put out there, so check it out. Let us know what you think. Thanks.
Well, Brandon, we'll do just that. Take a listen to the cat's meow. You can find this up on YouTube under the title Cat Sounds in Bloodsport if you want to watch it. It's a minute and 45 seconds, but maybe when you're not watching it, you can hear those meows.
Watch this, Frankie. I'm going to show you how it's done, buddy.
All right, that is it for Fan Creations. I heard those cat sounds, and boy, they were great. It takes you a second to kind of hear them, but then that sound mixer really was a genius. Okay, what do I want to talk about this week? It's time for Paul's Pick of the Week. All right, people, here's what I'm going to tell you to catch up on. If you haven't watched it yet, The Americans. It, to me, is the epitome of the type of show that you hear people talking about, but you never actually watch. That's how I was. People are like, oh, The Americans. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to see that. Oh, yeah, I got to see that. Oh, yeah. And it just always was on the the bottom of my list of shows to watch, and I always never got to it until I did. And man, oh man, oh Shevitz, I sound like a fucking dad. I love this TV show. It is so good. Kerry Russell, Matthew Rhys, they are Russian agents in America undercover. It's like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but if they work for the KGB, it's so good. Full of sex, full of murder. Noah Emmerich is my favorite actor of all time. He's so good. I loved him back in the day from that movie Beautiful Girls, which I should revisit before saying how great that movie is, but I do think that movie is pretty great. Timothy Hutton, Natalie Portman, a young Natalie Portman, and a bunch of other great people. But let me just tell you, people, Americans is really good. I am at the end of the second season. I just started it. I am loving it. So no spoilers, please. Check out The Americans. This is me now telling you, as someone told me, that finally convinced me to just fucking jump in and try it. All right, that brings us to the end of the show. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Twitter at HDTGM and our Facebook page. That is facebook.com/HDTGM. Plus, a big thanks to Marissa, Josh, Greta, Avril, Leanna, July, all the engineers at Earwolf, and everybody at Earwolf for making this show so damn good. Thank you guys so much for listening. Bye-bye.
This has been an Earwolf production. Executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.